Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Jordan Roiburn, founder and editor of The Daily Gold. Now, Jordan, we're going to skip general commentary on the actual gold price as gold is moving up today. And quite frankly, gold still is looking fairly strong in this environment of a general bear market for financial assets and financial markets broadly. Fact of the matter is, though, whenever you are in an environment like this, it's hard to hope or expect any one sector to truly just buck the trend and move drastically higher. That being said, though, again, gold trading in the, let's say, high 1800s, that is a historically good price for gold. Moving over to the stocks, though, very different story. Whether you look at GDX or GDXJ, which are the ETFs, for, well, GDX being the larger miners, GDXJ still being fairly large miners, but not quite as large. We've seen a bit of a rebound here in both of these ETFs. And one of the noteworthy things that you mentioned to me off mic was that these ETFs have filled some downside gaps that were put in throughout the month of May when a lot of these stocks were in a way melting down. What does that mean, Jordan? Does that mean that this could be the end of this run higher because they have filled most of those gaps?
I mean, not necessarily, Corey. You know, gaps are a sign of emotion, and there was quite a bit of emotional selling in that decline that began sometime in April. And, you know, we're seeing a good bounce, and that was to be expected because looking at GDX and GDXJ, I mean, you had some really severe declines in a short amount of time. And so that was going to portend to a bounce, and not just a bounce for a couple days. And so we're seeing, I think there were three main gaps. And I think GDX today has gotten into the middle of those gaps, whereas GDXJ has actually filled its middle gap. So GDXJ, I think, has been outperforming during this bounce. But, you know, they could be coming up on more significant resistance. I mean, even GDX, it's still quite a ways from the 50-day moving average. It's trading at 33, 32 now, and the 50-day is at another $2 above where it is right now. And for GDXJ, the same could be said for its 50-day. It's nearly $2 above where it is now. So that, I mean, those are potential targets if there's more buying that comes in. But, you know, gold has really stiff resistance around 1880 to 1900. And, of course, it's trading around 1870 today. So I think we could see a little bit more strength, but I don't see gold going above 1900 on this bounce. And so, the real test will be, you know, what happens after this little rally, if gold will just kind of, or if gold stocks will kind of fade a little bit, but they won't go drastically lower like they did a month or two ago, or if they, are going to fade, and then there might be a more momentum selling to the downside. You need to see the Fed be a lot tighter than expected, I think, for that to happen.
Well, Fed expectations right now still being 50 basis point hikes, but those are getting priced into the market pretty quickly. Balancing out GDX and GDXJ, I think GDX encouragingly managed to bottom a little above some of the lows throughout the last year. Well, GDXJ put in a new 52-week low, actually put in a low during that sell-off in early May that we hadn't seen since way back slightly when COVID hit, early April of 2020. That just goes to show how much weaker I think some of the juniors have been. You even filter that down into the explorers, and they still can't get off the mat. Jordan, what about the moving averages, the daily moving averages, like the 200-day? GDXJ is right up to that. GDX has actually gone over the 200-day moving average and is right at the 50-day moving averages. All these moving averages are moving sideways, too, not really showing any direction. Is that, again, telling you that it could just be more of a consolidation move from here?
Yeah, or more so when you have and that's an important point, the slope and the direction of moving averages is exceedingly important. And so when you have the 200-day and 400-day are going sideways, that means the market could be in a hot mess or in a larger range. So there's not there's not a lot more you can take from that. I mean, I'm taking more of my cues from, you know, Fed policy and macro developments. In the immediate sense, I don't see a lot of upside potential. Also, in the immediate sense, I don't see a lot of downside potential, again, unless the Fed becomes a lot tighter than expected. And, you know, I know we'll talk about individual stocks later, but even, you know, this past weekend, just looking at a lot of the ones in my universe, I mean, they're trading at some really, really good values. So who knows? Maybe we could see downside in terms of time more so than price after this rebound.
Jordan, you talked about Fed policy being a major driver. We're on top of that. What are some of the macro developments that you're watching then?
Yeah, I would just say bond yields in the market, how the market is pricing in Fed expectations. If we go back to last week, we started to hear a couple of Fed mouthpieces talk about, well, maybe the Fed could pause in September. I know Mohamed El-Erian was talking about it could be like a stop and go, where they, you know, they pause in September, and maybe a couple months after that they could do another hike if the economy is okay. So up until this week, the market was starting to price in a softer Fed with respect to the end of this cycle. So with respect to where interest rates could, where the Fed funds rate could be 12 months from now or at the end of this year. So that's where we were last week. However, you know, we've gotten a rebound in the stock market. So stocks have gained some traction. And, you know, predictably, that is allowing the Fed to at least say or indicate they might be tighter than expected. So it's kind of like a seesaw. You know, the market was really selling off until we got this good rebound and, you know, Fed mouthpieces and, you know, they're talking about, oh, well, maybe we could pause. And, you know, now we got this rebound. Stocks are doing better. It's gaining a little bit of traction. And because of that, that will allow Fed mouthpieces of the market to discount maybe a bit tighter policy. So I did see a note today where the terminal rate at the end of this cycle, the market, I think, was pointing to 2.75% at some point last week. And then according to this note, it was at 3.25%. So looking at what the, you know, the Fed funds rate could be at the end of this cycle. And so it's, you know, these Fed expectations, you know, every day they're going to change and every day they're going to shift, you know, with how the market discounts economic data and how the market itself performs, you know, vis-a-vis stock prices, credit spreads, and all that. And so, you know, we've got this reflex rally, and that's allowing the market to indicate, you know, the Fed could be a little tighter than expected. I think I saw the odds for a hike in September, a 50 basis points hike. Those odds jumped pretty high this week, you know, from a low level last week. So these Fed expectations and odds, I mean, they could be all over the place. But again, you know, it will depend on economic, you know, inflation expectations, how the market is thinking about how the economy is performing or changing. At least in the short term, it's really a mess because it's these expectations are going up and down. The bottom line is it's interesting because if the economy is stronger, you know, that's going to be better for, you know, corporations in the stock market. However, that would force the Fed to be tighter than expected. With respect to the stock market, I don't see realistically anywhere there can be a positive outlook, like for the balance of the year, because if the economy really rolls over, you know, that's going to be bad. And if it rolls over, you know, the Fed cutting rates is not necessarily going to, if you're going into recession, you know, it takes time for those rate cuts to really help. Whereas, as I just said, if the economy is stronger than expected, that will lead the Fed to be tighter. And if you're thinking about, you know, the White House, they probably know that the midterms are lost. And so what would be the smart strategy? The smart strategy is, you know, Biden wants to get reelected in 24. So the smart strategy is we need to crush inflation and have a recession ASAP, you know, so maybe I can get credit for, you know, coming out of the recession. It's difficult to say, oh, well this, you know, this is going to happen. There's, you know, uncertainty as to how this is going to play out. But I think it's going to be negative for stock prices.
Yeah, well, if the first almost two quarters of this year showed us anything, stock price is very much under pressure, and that even started at the tail end of last year. And to your point, the midterm election throw a whole other wrench in forecasting this year. But overall, it is still all about Fed policy, and the economic data plays into how people think the Fed will react. Let's also talk about silver, because silver has really been underperforming when you compare it to what gold has been doing. Silver is bouncing today, but you look back at just a couple days ago, the tail end of May, it was actually the lowest monthly close that we have seen in silver since back in mid-2020, July of 2020 or June of 2020. We had a close that was lower. I know that the price had come up off of the monthly lows, but still, any significance on how weak silver closed to end May?
Yeah, I would just say the significance is gold is still outperforming silver. It's interesting because silver is in this technical breakdown, and it does have really strong support down to the high 18s. However, if you look at the net speculative position, that came down to a nearly a three-year low as of the last week. So that portends to an oversold bounce. So silver could be, you know, bouncing alongside the miners and the gold price. But I, you know, bigger picture with silver, I don't think silver is going to perform that well until gold really gets going. I mean, it's the gold silver ratio is outperforming with respect to gold. It's trending up. I don't see anything particularly bullish about silver in the short or medium term. It's going to be dependent on, you know, gold getting close to that huge breakout that's coming at some point. So we'll see. Maybe the question will be after we have this reflex and oversold rally. I mean, is there going to be enough selling for it to roll over again and, you know, go down towards 19, or if it's just going to kind of, you know, sit here and not really do that much?
Man, it sounds like we could be in for a little bit of a boring period, but I guess that's better than everything moving down or crashing. Who knows, though? Again, a lot depends on if we do get a washout in the markets, I believe. When it comes to the stocks, then, look, we've touched on what the ETFs are doing, and there's no denying that juniors have continued to get sold off. They're going very low volume, a little bit of a bounce recently, but still, some of these juniors are starting to trade for cash in the bank valuations. Where has your focus been? Because it's not just the juniors that have been getting hit.
Yeah, I mean, my focus has been more so on the, I mean, I do own a few exploration companies, but my focus is more so on junior producers and developers that I think have a chance to have really significant production growth over the coming years. When you look at those types of companies, just the outcomes over the next couple years are more predictable with regard to their business. Yeah, you know, costs may go up here and there, but I mean, if they're funded and if with a management team that has a track record of success, I mean, it's the outcome there is going to be more predictable with how the business is going to go. And look, if they have huge production growth and gold makes a big breakout, they can make huge moves. And so I think a lot of these stocks, Corey, what's interesting is they've sold off so significantly that, you know, you don't have to make huge returns. You don't have to gamble on like penny juniors or drill holes per se. You know, there's a lot of stocks that are companies that have a really quality asset that's somewhat advanced, or, you know, they have a project that they can put into production that's already funded. They have a path to increasing their production over the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, these types of situations are trading at really, really good valuations now, where, you know, the potential upside is that much more because they've come down in price, you know, 20-30% or so. So my focus is more so on those companies where I think the outcomes over the next couple of years are more predictable versus exploration companies. Yes, I mean, you know, everybody wants to, you know, find what's going to be the next Great Bear or the next Silvercrest, but, you know, I just think those are, for the most part, those are going to struggle until we see gold, you know, trading above 2100. And so I think you here and now, I just think the value and the upside potential, the quality of the company, when you put all that together, I think on the developer and junior producer side, there's just, they stand out significantly over everything else.
Yeah, especially in this environment where financings are hard to come by too. It's nice to have some cash flow component to it. And look, these companies are doing pretty well. So as long as the producers don't have any major production issues and the metals prices stay relatively elevated, they should do just fine. But yeah, I know it's been tough watching a lot of these other stocks go down. The outlook for the juniors, the exploration companies, still is pretty tough out there. Jordan, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and thanks for making time today.